the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science.
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey number 151 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe, as presented on the radio show Escape. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in the Treasure Valley. I think I can get away one more time by saying Happy New Year. Yeah, for 2020, this is our first journey of the new decade, and it's Edgar Allan Poe month, and I'll be bringing to you a few stories from Edgar Allan Poe. The first one here is an old-time radio show from back in 1947, but I think it's one of the better ones. You know, over the years, as I've done several of these Edgar Allan Poe months, at times, I've kind of stayed away from the more common Edgar Allan Poe stories, because everybody's heard, even if you've never read an Edgar Allan Poe story or care to ever read an Edgar Allan Poe story, if you hear the name Edgar Allan Poe, the first thing you're probably going to think of is The Telltale Heart, maybe The Black Cat, but probably also The Fall of the House of Usher. Those three stories are probably the most famous stories. Oh, and The Raven, of course. Yeah, The Raven is probably the most popular thing that people know Edgar Allan Poe for. But The Fall of the House of Usher is a classic. And it's a classic for a reason. It's a very good story. I love the way that it's written. I love the rich language and the descriptions of the area and the house and of the characters. And just the way that it's told, where we're learning things about the House of Usher, just as the narrator is. It's very interesting way that this is told. You know, over the years, we've talked about how many of Poe's stories is told from the unreliable narrator point of view, where it's the murderer that's telling the story, and we're getting directly into their mindset. But here, the narrator is an outside observer, just like us, coming into the story. And it's a nice way to lead us into the house and getting to know the characters and what's going on. And a lot of times, especially with these old-time radio adaptations, it's hard to find a good representation of the feeling that I get by reading an Edgar Allan Poe story. And in my opinion, this is probably the best old-time radio show, I won't say of any Edgar Allan Poe, but definitely of The Fall of the House of Usher. I've listened to several, and some of them embellish, some of them add things, and some of them use more, well, it's 1940s typically, or 50s, so maybe it's not modern to us now here in 2020, but it's modern compared to, you know, the 1840s when Edgar Allan Poe was writing these stories, 100 years before they were produced for radio. Anyway, I'm probably talking too much about the story before we present it to you. So let me present it to you. Come with me, and let's journey into madness and the macabre.
Hello. My name is Roderick Usher, and today I'd like to talk to you about a very special product. It's simply marvelous. From the makers of Almost Berry Mix, Pseudo Tasty Cocktail, an overly diluted elixir. But first, let me say a few words about myself.
Both of us suffer from a morbid acuteness of the senses. Mine is the worse for having existed the longer, but both of us are afflicted with it. Any sort of food, more exotic than the most pallid mash, is unendurable to my taste buds. Any sort of garment other than the softest is agony to my flesh. My eyes are tormented by all but the faintest illumination. Odors assail me constantly. As I've said, sounds of any degree whatsoever inspire me with terror.
That's why your servant asked me to remove my boots.
Yes. And even so, I could hear you coming. Every footstep, every rustle of your clothes. I could hear your horse approaching. Hear the clatter of its hooves across the courtyard, your knock. The grating of the door bolt was like a sword stroke to my ears. I can hear the scratch of rat claws within the stone wall.
Everybody in the hood know that my boy Poe like to keep it dark. But more than any other famous EAP jams, Usher perhaps best representing the gothic style of lit that defined Poe's flow. I mean, this story got nasty weather, a creepy haunted mansion, some mystery sickness, hidden vaults, medieval decor, and the unnerving sense that some whack-ass thriller shit about to go down.
Available in a variety of near flavors, orange, grape, lemon, peach, grapefruit, guava, sponge, passion fruit, coconut, oyster, lime, cabbage, banana, beet, carp, and now big cherry vanilla. Though you may not be of the House of Usher and bear the unholy burden that comes with it, you can have the benefit of Sobe Life Water yourself. I swear on my mad sister Madeline, it's almost like drinking nothing at all.
Upset with today's headlines? Worried about the high cost of living? Want to get away from it all?
CBS offers you Escape.
You are the friend of a man living in death, confidant of a ghoul, witness to a nameless terror. You are a guest in the House of Usher.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a gloom-shrouded moor and a house where dread holds sway, as Edgar Allan Poe recounts it in his famous story, The Fall of the House of Usher.
It is with some regret, but I believe advisable that I identify myself only as a friend of Roderick Usher. Certainly the last and perhaps the only friend of that unhappy man. Having only one sister, he was the last male descendant of the ancient House of Usher. Roderick had been one of my boon companions in boyhood, but many years had elapsed now since our last meeting. And so as I held his letter in my hand, not yet opening it, I reflected with no little sadness upon the devious fates that chart our courses and drive old friends away from one another. But then a sudden feverish and nostalgic curiosity laid hold of me, and with fingers made clumsy by their eagerness, I tore open the letter and read,
"My dear friend, my need of you has so far outgrown my pride that I'm going to request a favor which I realize full well may involve considerable inconvenience to yourself. For some time past, I have been suffering from an acute bodily illness, illness intensified by serious mental oppression, if I may so call it. A horror which looms over me, a horror grown so great I dare no longer face it alone. And so, in all humility, and for the sake of years gone by, I beseech you to come to me at once, here to the family estate in the north. Should events conspire to prevent your coming, then only God may know the consequences. Your friend in desperation, Roderick Usher."
And so it happened that at the end of a dull, dark, and soundless day in the middle of October, I found myself, as the shades of evening drew on, within view of the grim and melancholy House of Usher. I confess that the first sight of the house, the fungus-covered walls of stone thrusting their crumbling ramparts against the darkening sky, rising out of the sullen, sluggish waters of the black tarn at their base, the bleak and vacant windows staring blindly, the bone-white trunks of decaying trees, these things filled me with a nameless and desolate terror, so that I reined in my horse and sat trembling, half fearing to cross the wooden bridge that led over the waters of the moat and up to the entrance of the House of Usher. Then impatiently I shook off this strange feeling of dread, and was an instant later clattering over the wooden bridge and onto the courtyard. I dismounted quickly, tossed my reins to the silent lackey who approached, strode across the gravel and up to the massive wooden portal, the door of the House of Usher. Good afternoon. My name is...
I know. You're the friend of Master Roderick. Please come inside, sir.
Thank you. But may I inquire how it happens you know me?
You have been expected for some time, sir.
Yes, true. But also I'm a stranger to you and could be some other visitor.
That you could be anyone other than the friend whom Master Roderick expects, sir, would be impossible. You see, no one else would ever come to this house.
Then I followed his stealthy footsteps through many dark and intricate passages. My earlier foreboding heightened and was made fearful by the somber aspect of the hallways by which we passed. The many unused rooms reaching out with their vast emptiness like some hideous jungle creeper. But at length, we stood before the door of the master studio, and there the servant left me, departed and left me to go in alone. The man across the room, half reclining on the couch, his back turned toward me, did not hear the opening of the door. For the space of several heartbeats, I saw only the deathly pale and ghastly sunken features of a stranger. Then only with difficulty could I recognize, behind that mask, my boyhood friend. For surely, under light of heaven, no man had ever before so terribly altered in so brief a time as had Roderick Usher.
Oh. Oh, my friend, you've come at last. Thank God you did come.
Oh, Roderick, did you not know I would? Could you not be sure that no long years would ever dim the friendship we shared in youth?
So many things have dimmed.
Ah, youth. It seems so long ago. But now you're here, and we'll find it, relive it all over again, every glorious moment of it. And all these shadows, all these gibbering phantoms that haunt me, they'll be driven out. And then the sun will shine again, and we'll be young again and relive...
Roderick!
Oh, but forgive me, my friend. My excessive joy at the sight of you after so many years drives me into a frenzy of talk. How many years has it... Oh, no matter. It is enough that you are here. Here, and brought with you all the lost, all the happy days of my boyhood.
But I'd expected from your letter to find you in serious straits indeed. Instead, you seem in the best of spirits.
You have the right to know. But in all frankness, here in your presence, I find it difficult to credit important to those things which only yesterday filled me with terror. True, I've been ill. A nervous affliction, something in the nature of a family weakness, probably. It has affected me with a morbid acuteness of the senses, such that quite often the least sounds and odors and colors become irritating beyond endurance. Then I've eaten but little, as you can see.
But surely you've retained the services of a physician.
A physician? Oh, yes, of course. He calls almost daily, though it is more often Madeline that he attends. You remember my twin sister, Madeline? For her, I fear more greatly than for myself. Even today, she's taken to her bed, and I have no doubt will never rise from it again.
Oh, a tragedy. The sympathies of my heart go out to you.
Oh, but leave it for the present. Leave it to dream of all those happy days we left so far behind. Everything will be different now that you're here. Do you remember when we were 12?
But the happy forgetfulness which Roderick found in my coming was short-lived. And in a few days, he had sunk into a morose torpor, from which only occasionally with frantic difficulty could he reach the joy of our first few hours of meeting. More often, his mental apathy was broken by bursts of vicious temper and violent ill humor, fits I could only excuse on the basis of his illness. And that illness began in my mind to assume a most mysterious character. Being unable to divine its true nature from Roderick's hesitant offerings, I took the liberty of questioning the physician a few days later when I chanced to encounter him in a hallway.
Yes. Yes, she's resting as well as might be expected.
But she continues to decline. Is that not correct, Doctor?
That would seem to be the case.
And the malady, the illness which has stricken her, is it the same as that which affects her brother Roderick?
I may venture that it is.
Might I inquire the nature of this illness?
As to that, I am unable to say.
You imply, then, that I have no right to the information?
Not at all. I am confessing to you quite simply, sir. I do not know what afflicts Madeline and Roderick Usher.
And so a week passed. A week in which the sullen, leaden skies darkened into deeper oppressiveness, in which Roderick's deathly pallor and creeping mental dissolution grew more apparent. A week in which the monstrous atmosphere of this ancient mausoleum began to crawl insidiously within my own consciousness, stirring into life a formless, unknown dread. Then one evening, we were sitting in the vaulted studio, while the first shadows of night began to flow together into pools of darkness. Roderick had been unusually troubled during the day and had been trying to find some solace by playing on the violin. Of a sudden, there came a knock upon the door.
Stop it! Stop that infernal pounding, do you hear? Do you wish to drive me completely mad? Open the door and come in, come in!
It's the doctor.
Well, what is it? What do you want?
Master Usher, I regret that I must say this, But it is my sad duty to inform you that your sister Madeline is no longer living.
Madeline, my sister. Then she's dead?
She breathes no more.
Dead? And perhaps, my dear doctor, you can tell me what caused her death.
Unfortunately, I can only take refuge in the term heart failure.
Heart failure? Ah, yes. Of course. Very well, doctor. If you'll be kind enough to wait, I'll come down directly and discuss the arrangement.
At your service. I bid you good afternoon, gentlemen.
Roderick, I assure you of my deepest sympathy.
You do. Your deepest sympathy. The doctor regrets his sad duty. Are you fools, both of you fools?
I don't understand.
Haven't you seen it yet? Can you not feel it about you? The horrid, monstrous, brooding spirit of this accursed house. Can't you hear its evil laughter as it lurks in the hallways and grows fat upon the soul, my dead sister?
Roderick.
Can't you see that it matters nothing to me that she's dead, but I myself walk but a few steps behind her into the same shadows of hell? Can't you sense those hideous tentacles even now reaching out for me? For me, who now the last living, if it be living, the last living descendant of the accursed house of Usher.
Such was the passing of Madeline Usher, once living, now dead. And her very death, untimely in its aspects, bore to my trembling soul a portent of events yet more hideous, more horrible, and yet to come. At a later hour of that same sad night, Roderick came into my chamber to voice an intention so morbidly unnatural that for the moment I could only feel that his tottering reason had at last failed him entirely.
Then you refuse?
But Roderick, this is madness.
I tell you, before this night is over, the coffin body of my sister shall rest in the vault beneath this house, and if you will not help me, I shall do it myself.
But why? Why?
I could not stand to think of her buried out there in the dark graveyard, alone among the dead.
Roderick, she too is dead.
It's fantastic how little we know of death or of life. The doctor says she no longer breathes.
She is dead.
She was so lovely, was my sister.
Roderick.
I must keep Madeline near me.
Nothing but evil would come of such an act.
I can trust no one but you. Not even the physician himself. He hates us because he can't discover what it is that kills us. Even he might steal the body of my beloved sister, and he might learn our secret. You understand, don't you, my friend?
Yes, Roderick. Yes, I understand. And so it came about. Near midnight, we two alone made our way to an upper chamber of the house. And taking up the black coffin between us, in the shuddering light of candles, we walked the tortuous passageways, slowly descended the curving stairs of stone, passed beneath the moldy level of the earth. Forced open a massive and age-rusted door of iron and stood at last with our ghastly burden in a subterranean, dank and musty crypt underneath the house of Usher.
Over here, my friend, on these trestles,
Now, a trifle higher with the head. There. Oh, may you sleep in peace and dream, sweet sister, from I who tread the same path soft behind you.
Come, Roderick. The thing is done.
Oh, wait. Stay a moment. We've not yet affixed the coffin lid. See? I've left it loose so it can be turned back.
No, I beg you.
A last farewell, no more. Look. Is she not beautiful?
Yes, she was very beautiful.
Was? Yes, of course. The look of her confused me. But do you not see it too? The warm glow of the cheeks, the eyes shut softly, those lips half parted. Does it not seem that she may rise up and speak to us at any moment?
This gruesome place inspires those morbid fancies.
Morbid fancies? But now dead she seems to live, and living seems already dead.
Man, you seek out madness. You court it with your very thoughts.
And if I do, what matters? What value can there be in reason without the hope of life? Dead, you say to me, she is dead. Upon what certainty? Why not with equal reason say instead she lives? And that I, the last of Usher, am the one who is already dead.
I prevailed upon my friend at last to leave that mournful place. And so with grim finality we secured the ebon lid, took up our flickering candles and departed from the crypt, leaving it alone with its darkness and death. The ponderous portal closed behind us, and then my soul for one brief instant felt the dread and awful meaning of eternity. There followed then a week of such dreary gloom and melancholy that my own spirit quavered at the menace of the nameless thing enshadowed in that house. By perceptible degrees, the living soul of Roderick Usher flickered lower. More ghastly grew his pallor, more tremulous the extremity of his terror. The eighth day following the death of Lady Madeline fell upon the last day of grim and gray October, and brought with it, as the curtains of night descended, the fitful breath of a rising tempest, uneasy gusts of sodden rain, and the sound of sullen, thunderous rumbles born of the dim flares of sheet lightning somewhere behind the lowering pall. I retired at a late hour, but found sleep impossible. At length, overpowered by some strange presentiment of evil, I found my reposeful inaction no longer endurable. And so I arose, threw on my clothes in haste, and fell to pacing the floor of my darkened chamber. Then in one instant, a soft sound in the blackness froze my steps in paralysis of terror. The latch of my chamber door was being lifted from without. Oh, was it? Was it, I say?
It is I, Roderick.
Oh, Roderick. What are you doing up and about at this hour, in pitch blackness? Wait, let me light the candles.
No, I am quite used to darkness. I heard your footsteps and knew that you must be awake, even as I was. But can it be that you've not seen it?
I don't understand you. I've seen nothing.
Then stay. You shall see it, even as I've seen it for these past 2 hours. Wait, wait. I'll throw open the casement window. There. Look!
It was indeed a tempestuous yet sternly beautiful night, and one wildly singular in its terror and in its beauty. The exceeding density of the clouds which hung so low as to press upon the turrets of the house did not prevent our perceiving the velocity with which they flew careening from all points against one another. We had no glimpse of the moon or stars, but terrible to behold, the undersurfaces of the huge cloud masses, as well as all terrestrial objects immediately around us, were glowing in the unnatural light of a faintly luminous and clearly visible phosphorescence, which hung like a shroud about the mansion itself.
You see, my friend, tonight the thing grows bolder, gathers strength from the storm and from the dead soul it's eaten.
No, no, Roderick, you must not look at this. Here, I shall close this window and pull these curtains. And now, candlelight. Such darkness is the very mother of evil fear. There. Now come, sit here. Suppose I read aloud from some book or another.
As you wish.
I presume it matters little which. Oh, here. Here's a volume of The Mad Trist by Canning. Will it serve?
As you said, it matters little.
I've always found the scene to be quite entertaining, wherein Ethelred dreams of fighting a dragon. Now, let's see. Oh, yes. Here it is. And so Ethelred waited no longer to hold parley with the hermit who mocked him from inside the hut. But feeling the rain upon his back and fearing the rising of the tempest, uplifted his axe and quickly made a hole in the plankings of the door for his gauntleted hand. And now, pulling sturdily, he so cracked and ripped all asunder that the noise of the dry and hollow-sounding wood alarmed and reverberated throughout the forest.
Why do you stop?
Why, that's strange. I fancied I just heard the very sound I read about.
Let us say it was caused by the storm, pray continue.
Oh, yes, the storm. Of course. But Ethelred, upon entering the door, was amazed to perceive no sign of the evil hermit, but instead a dragon of prodigious and scaly demeanor, which sat on guard before a shield of shining brass. And Ethelred uplifted his axe and struck the head of the dragon, which fell before him with a shriek so horrid and harsh, like whereof was never before. What sound is that?
Sound? The shriek of a dragon, my friend. Read on.
Very well. And now the champion, bethinking himself of the shield of brass, approached across the silver floor to where the shield hung upon the wall. But the shield, not waiting for his coming, loosed and fell upon the silver floor with a mighty great... And, Roderick, I tell you, something moves within this house. That sound, it reverberated through the very walls. Can you tell me now you did not hear it?
Hear it now? Oh, yes, I hear it and have heard it long moments, hours, many days have I heard it. Yet I dared not speak.
But why?
Do you not know we put her living in the tomb? I tell you now, I heard her first feeble movements in the coffin many, many days ago, and I felt then it mattered little. But now she comes to upbraid me for my haste. And that last dread sound, yes, I heard it, the opening of the metal door to the crypt beneath the house. Now she comes here. Have I not heard her footsteps on the stair? Do I not distinguish the heavy and horrible beating of her heart? Madman that I am, I tell you that she now stands without that door. But even now she opens it.
There in the flickering light of candles, in the gloom and curtained doorway, stood the shrouded body of Lady Madeline. For one shuddering instant, she swayed there. Then, as Roderick uttered a single piteous cry, she fell upon him in violent and now final death agonies and bore him to the floor, a corpse. From that chamber and from that mansion, I fled aghast out the massive portal over the causeway into the night.
Suddenly there shot along the path a wild light. Then I looked back in heightened terror, for the vast house and its shadows were alone behind me. The baleful gleam came from the setting full and blood-red moon, which now shone vividly through a widening crack in the walls of the house itself. And even as I gazed, its fissure opened rapidly. There came a fierce breath of the tempest. The entire lunar orb burst at once upon my sight. My brain reeled as I saw the mighty walls rushing asunder. There came a long, tumultuous shouting sound like the voice of thousand waters.
And the dark, deep tarn at my feet closed sullenly and silently forever over the pitiful ruins of the ancient House of Usher.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought you The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. Adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with Paul Frees as the narrator, Ramsey Hill as Roderick Usher, and Sheridan Hall as the physician. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Fuhrer. Next week...
You are the victim of a poorer man, pursued from the west coast of Africa to the west end of London by a dead man's head, which grins at you upside down.
Next week, Escape, with H.G. Wells' gripping story, Pollock and the Poorer Man. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when CBS again offers you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
So there you go. There's The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. And hopefully you agree with me that that's a very good adaptation for radio. To me, they capture a lot of the same language. Of course, it's not the same as reading the story. And there is some modernization, so to speak, of the language. But a lot of the descriptions and a lot of the things that are said is directly from the story. And I like that. And I don't know if I've ever talked about how I started to like Edgar Allan Poe. But I think, like most people, I learned about Edgar Allan Poe in high school because the teacher wanted to talk about Edgar Allan Poe. And so we read a couple of the short stories, and I don't think I ever read The Raven. I heard The Raven after I was introduced to Edgar Allan Poe because, like I said, it's probably his most famous work. But I really liked, I was kind of odd because I liked most of the things that we read in English class. You know, most people groan when you have to read an Edgar Allan Poe story, or you have to read The Catcher in the Rye, or Of Mice and Men, or The Grapes of Wrath, or Shakespeare, for heaven's sakes. But I always enjoyed it. I enjoyed the storytelling. I enjoyed learning about these old, I guess you could say, stories and these old authors. And I just got off on that when I was in high school. And so I'm sure I was in the minority. But where was I going with that? Well, I guess just to say that's where I learned about Edgar Allan Poe. And I really enjoyed Telltale Heart, as most people do, I think. And I really enjoyed The Black Cat and just that, for lack of a better word, perverse perspective. And just the directness, I guess, and the closeness. Maybe the intimacy, is that the word I'm looking for? Between you and the narrator? That it's very visceral? I don't know if the words I'm using are matching their true meaning. But I think last year when I talked about Edgar Allan Poe and his views on poetry, his main goal was to have an effect upon the reader, to have them engage with the story emotionally and personally. And that's what he was going for. It wasn't for this high-minded morality or whatever of the story, but he just wanted to connect with the readers and make them feel something. That was important to him. And you get that with these stories. This story always seemed very... It was hard for me to penetrate this story when I first heard it. Maybe I just wasn't ready for the subtleness of this story. The more you learn about this story, the more you read this story, you may pick out different things that you wouldn't have picked out before. You know, there's a very surface level, but then there's some underlying things that you pick out. And maybe you picked out some things as you were listening to this. But I don't know, yeah, like I said, it was hard for me to understand where we were, who the characters were, what was going on the first time I read this as a teenager. And it might have just been my mindset at the time. And so I just kind of said, I don't know if I really like the Fall of the House of Usher. But over the years since then, I've really learned to like it and to appreciate it. Again, we have this idea of somebody being buried alive or entombed alive. And this was something that Edgar Allan Poe talked about again and again. And of course, women dying is something that comes out again and again in his writing. And it must have been something on his mind, or it's something that he knew would have an effect on people. I think it was a real fear that he had of being buried alive, as many people might have back in the day, when that was more common than you would expect. But anyway, one thing that helped me like this story is another book that I ran into later on. I was still in high school, I believe, but I was a little bit older. And when my mom would go to the grocery store or whatever, I would go to where they'd have a spinner rack of books, not necessarily comic books at that time. Well, I guess I started reading comics around that time as well, but I wasn't looking for spinner racks of comic books. I would always look for spinner racks of books, and I would find it, and I would look for one that looked interesting. And I remember looking through the spinner rack, and I saw this book, and it had a jack-o'-lantern face on it with a menacing looking grin with a big wide mouth on it. And inside the jack-o'-lantern, or behind the jack-o'-lantern, it had this gothic looking house with dark skies and lightning coming down. And in big bold letters, it read, "Usher's Passing." And I looked it up here before I started recording. It was written by Robert R. McCammon. And I had never read that author. And then the tagline on the book cover said, "The House of Evil Rises Again." And I was like, oh, the house of Usher, Usher's Passing. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to pick this up. So I did. And I read it, and it was, I don't know if it was my first horror novel that I had ever read, but it probably was, or it was right in there. And I liked it quite a bit. And the premise of the story was that it was somebody living in modern day, and they were a descendant of Roderick Usher. The curse or malady of the Ushers had been passed to him. It was a hereditary thing. And I think, and I don't remember a lot about the story, but I think he ended up going back to the house. And, which is interesting. I don't know how they took care of that, because the house did kind of crumble in on itself at the end of this story that we just listened to, right? So, I don't know how they explained that or whatever, but yes, he did go back to the House of Usher, and there was other things going on. I don't remember what the plot of the story is. Maybe I should try to find this book again and read it and talk about it next year or something. But I really like this book, and I think because of that, I probably went back and read this book again, and I enjoyed it a lot more the second time that I read it. And I've enjoyed it ever since. So I don't know... Is that the same experience you've had with Edgar Allan Poe or The Fall of the House of Usher? Was it hard for you to get into and understand what was really going on? I don't know. I guess for the Telltale Heart, it's kind of hard to not understand what's going on. It's all pretty much laid out there pretty simply. But this one, if you're not paying attention, I guess, might just seem like a crazy person in a house, which is true. But there's other things going on about it. But I really, again, I'm attracted to the language, the way that he describes the house and describes Roderick and the things that are going on. He just builds this mood, this oppressive, gloomy, gothic, I guess, mood. And, you know, it just plays in to the whole style of Poe. And, you know, when they say the gothic horror, this is what they're talking about. If you didn't feel that while you were listening to the radio adaptation of it, let me read you just this one little portion from the story. And I don't know if I'll be able to do it justice, but I've always really liked this part.
Having deposited our mournful burden upon trestles within this region of horror, we partially turned aside this yet unscrewed lid of the coffin and looked upon the face of the tenant. A striking similitude between the brother and sister now first arrested my attention, and Usher, divining perhaps my thoughts, murmured some few words from which I learned that the deceased and himself had been twins, and that sympathies of a scarcely intelligible nature had always existed between them. Our glances, however, rested not long upon the dead, for we could not regard her unawed. The disease which had thus entombed the lady in the maturity of youth had left, as usual in all maladies of a strictly cataleptical nature, the mockery of a faint blush upon the bosom and the face, and that suspiciously lingering smile upon the lip, which is so terrible in death. We replaced and screwed down the lid, and having secured the door of iron, made our way with toll into the scarcely less gloomy apartments of the upper portion of the house.
I don't know, I just like how there's a little bit of foreshadowing there that Madeline isn't really dead. And, you know, I've been to funerals and I've seen the corpse of loved ones like my grandfather and grandmother and others. And I've never really felt uneasy or unsettled by that. But as I read that passage, and I picture myself in the catacombs of this huge gothic house and the darkness that surrounds us, and I'm looking into a stone coffin in this tomb, down upon this dead woman who probably hasn't been embalmed and, you know, had all of the modern treatments that morticians give to dead bodies to make them look somewhat alive, but to look down upon this person who is dead, I don't know, it's just, I just, that really affects me, and it really seems spooky to me to be in that situation. And I would probably walk pretty hastily out of there and close that door and get upstairs just to get away from that kind of thing. So I don't know, I really like Edgar Allan Poe, obviously, because I've done Edgar Allan Poe months for several years. So anyway, I thought this would be a good first story to present to you in this year's Edgar Allan Poe month. In case you missed it, I am running a new writing contest this year. The first stage of that is just to let me know that you would like to contribute a story to this writing contest. So you have until the end of January this month to do that. If you're interested in writing a story for this contest, let me know, and I will put you down on a list. And at the end of January, when I get a list of everybody, then I'm going to assign you a title of a journey song to use as a title for your story. And you would have to use a couple phrases out of the lyrics of that song as well in your story. I won't go through all the details. I'll put another link to all of the submission guidelines. But it'll be a story from 2,000 to 7,500 words, in that range, wherever you would like to write a story. And I'm excited about it. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I am going to participate this year, not in the contest, but in writing a story in the same time frame that you, as a participant in the contest, will. Let me know, and I'll put you down on the list to be assigned a story title. You can let me know on the blog post where you find this podcast at journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com, or you can send me an email at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. Or I guess if you want to get in practice for where you're going to have to submit your story, that'll be at journeyintosubs, S-U-B-S, journeyintosubs@gmail.com. Or if you just hit me up on Facebook or Twitter and let me know that you want to be part of the contest, I'll put you on the list. I'm not picky about how you tell me, just let me know. I have a couple other stories coming up for you this month, and I hope you enjoy them as well. But until next time, stay safe out there, everybody, and journey on.
The Journey Into podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license, which means that you can share this audio as much as you would like, but please do not try to sell it or change the audio. The theme music has been provided by Man in Space.